Support for Radio Boston comes from Hadestown at the Box Center Wang Theater, Broadway's Tony and Grammy-winning Best Musical, an epic celebration of music, togetherness, and hope, raves Forbes. Playing April 23rd through April 28th. Buy your tickets today at boxcenter.org.
This is Radio Boston. I'm Tiziana Dearing. 3 years ago to the day, on March 10th, 2020, then-Governor Charlie Baker shuts the state down, declares a state of emergency in response to COVID-19. Today, we are bringing back some of the voices that we at Radio Boston have counted on for perspective and insight throughout the last 3 years. And our focus, what has changed? What do we do differently now? What have we learned? And how do we look going forward? First up, Michael Curry. He is the president of the Massachusetts League of Community Health Centers, a member of the NAACP National Board of Directors. Michael, good to talk to you. Welcome back.
Good morning. Good morning. Glad to be back.
So, you know, Michael, it's almost hard to remember what those days felt like. I want to play a little sound from Governor Baker on March 10th.
All work-related travel, both foreign and domestic, is to be discontinued until further notice. We will also strongly encourage that executive branch employees avoid any personal international travel. Conferences, seminars, and other discretionary gatherings hosted by the executive branch agencies involving external parties are to be held virtually or canceled.
Okay, so here's my honest question for you, Michael. I hear that, right? It's a time I don't want to go back to. When we're 3 years to the day today, are you reflecting today? Are you like, I don't even want to think about it today? Where are you?
Well, I think I reflect on it because I work in the healthcare space, and I know that we're not completely through COVID. People are still dying. There's still a variant, XBB 1.5, that's very contagious, and that variant is taking lives as we speak on this call right now. And then I'm thinking about the lost lives over the last 3 years. As President Biden says, those empty chairs of people we've lost. I know we'd like to move on. I know we want to take the masks off and be back in the normalcy of our lives. But the reality is we still have a pandemic. So, no, I'm reflecting on how far we've come. I'm celebrating the work we've done in Massachusetts to make us one of the best states to respond to this pandemic. But I'm also thinking solemnly about how much we've lost.
And I want to note this XBB 0.1.5 is the latest shoot off of the, you know, the globally dominant Omicron variant. And that takes us to this present moment, Michael, where it's still morphing. It's still stalking. What is the central thing that should be our focus as a human community in this moment 3 years on?
Well, one is we learn so much, Tiziana, and you and I have talked about it many times before. As we learn, we talk about epidemiology and John Snow, you have to track disease. You have to know where it is, who it's impacting, so that you have the right strategy to address the disease, the right interventions. We didn't do that well. We knew a pandemic was coming. We knew it was an inevitability. It wasn't a matter of if, it was a matter of when. We were not prepared with PPE and ventilators and outreach and education strategy. And we defunded our public health infrastructure so it couldn't respond in the way we needed it to. So we learned all of that in 3 years. Now the question becomes 3 years later, are we in a better position? And my answer would be no. Our systems are still underfunded and underinvested in. And quite frankly, we could be back here again with the next variant or the next pandemic, the next disease. So I think we still have a lot more work to do.
And you run the Massachusetts League of, by the way, John Snow essentially invented epidemiology. I remember those early conversations, Michael, because to this day, I remember you talking about how you'd been, you know, I said something about it keeps us awake at night. And you were like, I've been an insomniac for a decade.
Right? Exactly. Snow what?
And so what's the work, the most important? I mean, it's dismaying to hear someone with your expertise say, we're not better off today. In your mind, and then we'll bring in some other voices, what's the core work, the key work, the piece? Okay, everybody's going to double down right now on X. Yeah.
So one is just educating ourselves, right? So we need to understand the importance of vaccines because we still know that people are resistant to distrusting of vaccines. I think we've had to address the taint of race in our health system, to make sure that those black and brown folks who may know about Tuskegee Syphilis Experiment or J. Marion Sims experimentation on slaves or their own lived experience with healthcare systems failing them, that we need to address their distrust and then bring them back in to trust our system and then earn their trust. So that piece, I think we've begun the work of doing that. And then our systems need to be invested in. Here in Massachusetts, across the country, we need to put the money where our mouth is and make sure that our public health infrastructure can respond with the testing, the contact tracing, the public awareness campaigns, and then the vaccinations that are necessary. Health centers stepped in the gap across the country because in many cities and towns across this country, the public health infrastructure did not have the staffing or the resources to do that. We don't need to be there again. We just need to be prepared.
All right, Michael Curry, you're going to stay with us, I know, and I appreciate that as we have this conversation. I'm going to ask you to sit tight. I want to bring another voice in now. Lou Wolf is the president of Hebrew Senior Life, which is an elder care network in Greater Boston. He's led through the organization through the pandemic, and we've talked since the early days. Lou, welcome back.
Thanks. It's good to be back.
So, Lou, you know, Michael was just saying, not better off than we were where we were 3 years ago. A lot has changed in nursing home care and elder care in the last 3 years. In your field, are we in a different place? Are we in a better place?
So I agree with a lot of what Michael's saying about things that we still need to do and we need to improve. But in our industry, I actually do believe we're in a much better place. I think that since the pandemic started, people in our industry, whether it's affordable housing, independent living, assisted living, long-term care, all things that we do, we are much more informed on infection control procedures. We're much more informed on the importance of socialization. We always knew socialization was very important, but we really over-focused a little bit on infection control in the early days and didn't pay as much attention to socialization, which is critical for people at the later stages of their lives. We've also learned the value of technology and how it can help keep people engaged while keeping them socially distanced. We've learned the value of communications. We've always known that communicating with our patients, residents, and their families and staff was very important. But I would say these last 3 years, we've communicated much more about a lot of things and learned that even on an ongoing basis, that communication is critical. And I would just say the last thing, and maybe the most important thing we've learned the importance that our staff provides to what we do. They are Hebrew Senior Life. They are the front line. They have been through an incredibly challenging period of time, but an incredibly rewarding period of time. And I think that people in our industry did not value and care for our staff as much as we should have prior to this. And I think people have learned that lesson, partially out of appreciation and partially out of need because of the staffing challenges that we all face.
So, Lou, I want to do a little bit of then and now as we talk about, the 3-year mark of the state of emergency here in Massachusetts. I'm going to play a little sound now. This has to do with the Holyoke Soldiers Home. I know I don't need to remind you, but for our listeners, WWLP-TV, April 15th, 2020, this is a reporter named Mike Mascadrelli.
The state's Office of Health and Human Services announced just an hour ago that three more veterans at the Holyoke Soldiers Home have passed away. Here are the latest numbers from the state. As of today, 47 veterans have died, with 38 testing positive for COVID-19.
And by the end of that outbreak, at least 84 veterans died of COVID. Now, fast forward. Five people have died at a nursing home in South Yarmouth over the past 2 weeks due to a COVID outbreak. I'm most noting both outbreak, but also five versus the numbers we were seeing before. But also this thing that's happening with Northeast Health Group and its four nursing homes out in the western part of the state. Boston Globe reporting just this morning about an appeal to the state to take over their closing. And Northeast Health Group is claiming that they can't operate affordably, profitably anymore after an April 2021 ruling that said no more than two people in a room in our nursing homes. So we're seeing impact, we're seeing change, we're also seeing vulnerability. How much of that is just the vulnerability of the elder population to COVID, even these new strains like Michael Curry talked about that are somewhat less deadly for those who have been vaccinated, but highly, highly contagious?
Well, there's no question that the people who are in nursing homes, you know, we've come a long way over the last 10 years where there are a lot of alternatives for people who are older to stay home. Technology, assisted living has grown. So people in nursing homes are far, far more frail and vulnerable than they used to be. So there's no question that the deaths that are occurring in nursing homes, that being a kind of a focal point, is both because of the frailty of the population and because it's not an environment where you can socially distance residents from staff. You know, in assisted living, in independent living, you really can have people in their apartments and you can do an awful lot for them in a socially distanced way. In a nursing home, because of the frailty of the patients, not only are they more vulnerable, but they need a tremendous amount of hands-on care. You know, a lot of them are on the continuum of some level of dementia. So it's an impossible population to care for in a socially distanced way.
But in a nutshell, you do feel like we're in a better place now than we were 3 years ago.
I do feel we're in a better place. I think a lot of the struggles that are occurring is because people in nursing homes are sicker. So, you know, the costs of caring for those people, because of the cost of labor, the cost of medications, the PPE and everything, these nursing homes have a much, much higher cost structure. And the state and the Medicare have not responded enough to those additional costs. So, you know, it's very understandable why all these providers are struggling financially.
All right, Lou, I know that you are retiring from Hebrew Senior Life this summer. I want to thank you for the time that you've spent with us over the last 3 years. Lou Wolf, CEO of Hebrew Senior Life, thanks so much.
Thanks.
So, Michael Curry, I'll come back to you with Lou's voice still ringing in my ears there. That just makes me come back to your point about doubling down on vaccination right now.
Yeah, I mean, I think about, and you raised this with Lou, it's five people who died there in the Cape, but that's actually 75 residents who were infected with COVID, 20 staff members. This is not going to be, as he said, gone, because those are lowered immunity individuals. Those are folks who are frail elderly, and we have to safeguard and protect their health. So I think, you know, credit to the nursing homes. Lou said it best. We didn't appreciate first responders, our clinical staff in hospitals, in health centers, nursing homes across this country like we do now. But lest we forget, because as we get further away from the mass deaths under COVID, I do feel very strongly, Tiziana, we'll forget all that we learned in the last 3 years and we'll get comfortable again. So credit to the nursing home folks for all the work that they do. And I do think the regulations, the heightened regulations around how many people are in a room will provide some safety for our frail elderly when they're in nursing homes.
And we're marking 3 years to the day today since then Governor Charlie Baker declared a state of emergency in the Commonwealth due to COVID-19. Still with us, Michael Curry of the Massachusetts League of Community Health Centers. And I'm going to welcome now Almi Abeda, Superintendent of Schools in Chelsea, who we've spoken with a lot over the last 3 years. Welcome back, Superintendent.
Thank you so much. It's great to be back.
So, Superintendent, I just have one big question for you, which is, are the kids all right?
Oh, that's a very big question. I would say the kids are all right, but we have so much to recover. As far as learning loss, we're really working to accelerate learning loss with our students. Some of our students came back after the pandemic several years behind, so we're working diligently and hard to recover from that learning loss and accelerate learning. And then we also have, on the other side, we have the mental health issues that we're dealing with our students. And so just really making sure that we identify our students who are struggling and really meeting their needs. How do we ensure that our students are getting the supports that they need? So it's both the social-emotional support and the teaching and learning support. So we have our hands full. Our educators, our teachers are amazing. The work is different than it was pre-pandemic, and I just can't thank our teachers and all of our staff for the work that they do every single day. And so we're moving.
So that is so helpful, and it makes me want to ask this one follow-up, which is, okay, so in your work, and part of the reason that we talked with you throughout the pandemic is you've been very aggressive about pandemic control measures, COVID-19 control measures in the Chelsea Public Schools, mindful of the disproportionate impact, especially early on, that the virus had in Chelsea. Today, is there any part of your mind share? And okay, let's do it this way. What's the ratio of mind share between virus prevention in the school versus long-term impact reversal and mitigation? Do you understand my question?
I do. I mean, I think for us, especially in Chelsea Public Schools, we were always on the very conscientious, conservative side of everything. So when schools across Massachusetts went back to school hybrid, we were still in-person learning and remote learning. I believe we were, when the commissioner said, you have to come back to school, that is when we came back to school. But even then, only 50% of our families opted in. And we were one of the last districts to lift the mask mandate. So we haven't forgotten. And I think it's one thing as a leader, I always think about, it's like we learn from what we've gone through, and we don't forget. And it's something that while we're focused on instruction and really meeting the needs of our kids, both social and emotional, mental health needs and instructional needs. But at the same time, we've learned so much. We have systems in place, the team that I have. So at the drop of a hat, if we have to do masks on or we have to go into virtual learning, we know we have that muscle memory. We know we can do it. We don't want to at all. I do believe that students need to be in school. It's healthy socially. But I will say, because we were hit so hard as a community in Chelsea, I don't think we've forgotten. I also think we move forward with a lot of gratefulness that we are able to be together right now, but it's not lost on us.
All right. Almia Beta, Superintendent of Schools in the Chelsea Public Schools. I know it's the middle of the school day there. We appreciate you touching bases with us. Be well.
Oh, thank you so much. Take care.
So turning back to you briefly, Michael Curry, Massachusetts League of Community Health Centers, one of our first conversations on air about COVID was equity. And we just heard what Almia Beta told us. Just give the equity call one more time.
Yeah, so one, just credit to her and the staff and all of our educators for what they did through this pandemic. I mean, they showed up to educate our children. We know that our kids already were dealing with a equity or achievement gap before this pandemic. And now those gaps have widened and worsened. And now those educators, those administrators are on the front line of trying to make up for that deficit that was created. I want to say just a shout out, Gladys Vega, the executive director of La Collaborativa, East Boston Neighborhood Health Center, the folks in and around Chelsea who really stood up and stood out in trying to respond to this pandemic and raised equity at every moment they could to say, if disease is disparately impacting our neighborhood, give us more vaccinations, put more resources in the community-based organizations, invest in getting vaccines in our arms. And by the way, convince us that we need to take a vaccine, because that's what equity is all about, is addressing the fact that we're being impacted in a way that is disparately making us sick and taking our lives. So I'm just a huge fan of the folks in Chelsea, the educators, the healthcare providers. They were a model for the rest of the country, quite frankly.
All right, Michael Curry, I know you're against the clock, too. I wanted to thank you for joining us. We're going to let you go there. Michael Curry of the Massachusetts League of Community Health Centers, really one of our most important guides through the last 3 years. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Always a pleasure to be with you.
I'm going to welcome now Adrian Ma. Adrian was a business reporter here at WBUR during the first year of the pandemic. Now he's at NPR, reporter and host of the podcast, The Indicator from Planet Money. Adrian, welcome back.
Tiziana, it's good to be back.
So you did a series called My COVID Economy when you were here at WBUR, looking at the sort of the personal, financial, and economic impact on people, right, at that time. What of that still feels the most present with you today?
I guess, I mean, I did like so many stories that I forget. And
I mean, what are the lessons there, the things that people experienced in that series feel like, yep, that's what we're still living right now?
Oh, It's hard to say, because I feel like in the past few months, it feels like business-wise, things have really started to open up. But, I do wonder from a sort of a business point of view, I was thinking, like, I did a lot of stories talking to small business owners. Maybe what lingers is a sense of uncertainty and, awareness of, like, what other shoe may drop in the future, what other big thing is going to happen that could suddenly, you know, put your business in jeopardy.
Yeah.
I'm thinking specifically about, like, the last story I did was about a cafe in downtown Boston that was closing after, you know, a few pretty successful years. And I remember asking the owner, this guy named Jamie, who's like, what's the hardest part about closing? And his answer was basically just like, I don't know if I'm doing the right thing.
Yeah, we've got a little bit of that sound for you. Jamie Valdez, Kitchen Cafe near South Station. Here you go.
A lot of our customers are office people, and office people are now working from home. Everybody talks about the light at the end of the tunnel. We don't know when the light is going to click on, or if it ever going to click on.
Adrian, to your point.
Yeah, I imagine, you know, even though we're sort of in a different phase of the pandemic right now, that sense of uncertainty for the businesses that are still around probably lingers.
And last question for you, Adrian, you sort of answered at the very beginning. The other thing I wanted to know from you is, in your work with Planet Money, in the reporting you're doing now, does it feel like businesses in general are moving on, are opening back up, are in their sort of post-pandemic phase?
I think so. I mean, I guess, the consumer spending has been pretty resilient over the past year. And I think in a lot of ways, the consumer has helped kind of push the economy along in the past year. Jobs are still strong. People have sort of gone from spending their money on stuff to spending it on experiences like restaurants. And they're trying to get out in the world. And yeah, I mean, we're still living with the remnants of the pandemic, I went to a bar yesterday that said, we need to see your vaccination proof. That's still there, but it does feel like, businesses are finding a way forward.
All right. Adrian Ma is reporter and host of the NPR podcast, The Indicator from Planet Money, was a reporter here at WBUR in those earlier days. Good to check in with you, Adrian. Thanks.
Thanks a lot.
And now to the doctors. Dr. Benjamin Linus, he's an infectious disease physician at Boston Medical Center, an associate professor of medicine at the Boston University School of Medicine, and a frequent guide for us, especially in the early days in our Ask the Doctors, which at one point we were doing multiple times a week because the questions were coming so fast. Dr. Linus, welcome back.
That's great to be here. Thanks for having me.
So, Dr. Linus, Michael Curry of the Massachusetts League of Community Health Centers started us off by saying, boy, if I ask myself the question, have we learned and are we better off? My answer is no. From your perspective, what's the answer to that same question?
You know, unfortunately, I think I agree. I'm not sure that we have. I think that there's been a lot of opportunities to learn, and we've briefly made insights. And then I think it's human nature, political nature, to fall back to what we know and what we're comfortable with. And so, you know, I heard some of Dr. Curry's words. We've seen extreme inequity in this pandemic. We continue to, and there's been talk in the right direction and some steps made, but ultimately what I've seen is that at the end of the day, people are still really struggling to understand that their experience with this pandemic is not the only experience with the pandemic. And I hear lots of colleagues and friends and professionals in the media making a lot of statements about what the pandemic is or is not now, which clearly are informed by their own lived experience, and they don't take the time to necessarily look up and recognize that their lived experience is only one example amongst millions. And I think we have to learn to do better to do that, and to look around and have some empathy and some understanding for the fact that the world looks different for different people based on where you are and what you're doing. And what you're experiencing today isn't what everyone is experiencing. So, and I see that with people, you know, vociferously arguing the pandemic is, quote, over, that we need to revert back to the way things used to be. And it's always just disappointing to me that we're squandering an opportunity to really change the way things are and do better.
What should have permanent, what should we be permanently changing? What's something that, you know, we're squandering an opportunity to change the way things are and do better? What's a change you want to see?
So, for example, a concrete one is the end of the pandemic. You know, the end of the official public health emergency means that everything's going to go back to the way it used to be, and that we're going to have for-profit manufacturers charging money for vaccines, that if you don't have insurance or the money to pay for it, then you don't have access to vaccine. Similarly with take-home tests or Paxlovid access, we're just falling back to our old system. And the old system didn't work. The old system is what got us to where we were in the midst of the pandemic. The old system is what drove that disparity. And now that the pandemic's over, we're just going to fall back there instead of take the opportunity to do the hard work to try to think about how we organize and structure our healthcare system.
So
I realize, you know, that's a big thing to say, but it takes big things to make big change. And I would argue the pandemic was an opportunity.
So May 11th is the end of the state of emergency federally. And I think I hear what you're saying is it's not that we need to be in a perennial state of emergency. It's that we should be adopting some of the things that came with the state of emergency as permanent healthcare and public health practices.
Absolutely. And I think that's important. Thank you. Yes, I don't think we need to be in a state of permanent emergency. But this is another thing that I've seen not change. And I think it's partly human nature. We talked about this at various times during the pandemic, that people were seeking 0-1 solutions to these problems. When will it be over? Am I now immune?
Yes or no, basically.
And so people want the pandemic to either be still on or over. And why is it not possible that it's different, right? And that's not either a 0 or a 1. We're not, thank God, where we were in 2020. And we shouldn't be using the same policies we used then. But why is our only option then to fall back to the way it was in 2019, which just wasn't working for us? I think the pandemic is proof positive of that.
So Dr. Linus, we have literally 30 seconds left. What's one thing we've gotten better on?
I think we've started to get better at thinking about the way that we're going to respond to the next pandemic or the next public health emergency. And I think we're starting to do a better job of thinking about the way we do research in that environment. And I'm excited about that. I see a new focus on equity and diversity in the research that we do and in the ways that we respond to public health emergencies. So I hope that turns into action for the future.
Well, Dr. Benjamin Linus is an infectious disease physician at Boston Medical Center, an associate professor of medicine at the Boston University School of Medicine, and someone who's provided incredible amounts of time to our listeners over these last 3 years as we've made our way through the pandemic. Dr. Linus, it was good to talk to you today. Thank you.
Yeah, it's great to be here. Thank you so much for those kind words. Take care.